From the 28th to the 31st of October of this year, the World Education Forum was held in Palestine, simultaneously taking place in Ramallah, Haifa, Gaza, and Jerusalem, and a sister conference convened in Beirut, Lebanon, for those who were refused an Israeli visa. The World Education Forum took place during a time of ongoing occupation of the Palestinian people, the siege of Gaza, and the persecution of local and international social justice activists. The brutal attack on the Freedom Flotilla is only the latest event in the escalation of Israeli policies of aggression. We see Israel increase their deportation of witnesses and social justice activists as international solidarity efforts for a free Palestine, including the call for boycott, divestment, sanctions, gain momentum. On the phone with me is Stéphane Christophe. Stéphane is a Montreal-based musician, journalist, and social justice activist with Tedemon. Stéphane is joining us from Amman, Jordan. Good morning, Stéphane.
Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thousands of people from across the globe gathered to the World Education Forum to publicly express support for Palestinians, Palestinian human rights and freedom, particularly in the way of Palestinians' right to education, including a group of more than 50 people from Quebec, Canada, and that group included you. Can you talk about what had happened on your way to the World Education Forum in Palestine?
Well, yes, the World Education Forum was a gathering in Palestine, as you mentioned, really with the aim for people to support the right to education. Given the Israeli occupation of every aspect of life in occupied Palestine, students aren't able to get to school, access universities, checkpoints, military closures enforced by the Israeli military basically undermine Palestinians' right to access education at all different levels, from elementary school to university. And so this forum was really about bringing people together to express support for that struggle of Palestinians to access education. And there was more than 50 people from Montreal that traveled there. I helped coordinate that delegation, included a lot of members of unions and professors at the college level and university level in Montreal. I was refused entry into Palestine given my public advocacy for Palestinian human rights in Canada. In addition, the growing boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign in Canada to basically target the Israeli government. Given my involvement in these two campaigns, I was refused entry at the border, at the Israeli border. And unfortunately, I was deported to Jordan, where I am now here in Amman.
Mm-hmm. And you had been previously refused entry into Palestine in 2003. Can you talk about that experience?
Yeah, no problem. As you mentioned in your introduction, there's a systematic attempt to isolate Palestine from the world. So we see, for example, the systemic deportation and exclusion of human rights activists, whether they're involved with the International Solidarity Movement, which was the group that Rachel Corrie was involved in when she was killed in Gaza in 2003. I'm also a member of the International Solidarity Movement. So systematically, we've seen members of that organization being refused entry into Palestine, deported, arrested from occupied Palestine by the Israeli authorities. So beyond that, there's also the systemic closure of Palestinian land. So Palestinians living in Gaza, for example, are denied the right or the ability to leave Gaza. It's a prison. It's completely closed from the outside world. It's a siege enforced by the Israeli army and navy. And also complicit is the Egyptian military, which patrols the southern Rafah border crossing of Gaza. So that's the reality, is closure. So I think on the other side of this is what we're seeing around the world, which is a growing solidarity movement with Palestine across the globe. Since the war on Gaza, the bombing of Gaza at the turn of 2009, we've seen a heightened interest and understanding of the Palestinian struggle for freedom. And in tandem, I think the Israeli government is becoming more and more vigilant about trying to undermine that global movement. But I think obviously this is a lost cause, as we saw with the movement in opposition to apartheid in South Africa throughout the 1970s and 80s, types of grassroots movements for freedom, for social justice, with time and with also repression from governments and states, only gain power and gain strength. And that's what we're seeing today with the Palestine Solidarity Movement through the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign.
Mm-hmm. Many people traveled to Palestine to witness apartheid firsthand, and solidarity visits and delegations have played a key role in shaping international solidarity with Palestine. Israeli occupation forces, how have they responded recently to the many other forms and acts of international solidarity for Palestinian human rights and freedom in general?
Well, I mean, as the world saw, when international activists attempted to deliver aid and support Gaza through the flotilla this last winter, when they organized ships coming from Europe and Turkey to deliver aid to the besieged Gaza Strip, what we saw was an attack by the Israeli army. Basically, activists were killed, shot by the army. Activists from Turkey, many were injured, including activists from Canada. And so there was an attempt to break the siege, break the isolation of Gaza, which UN officials have called the largest prison in the world. And so that attempt to break the siege was met by military repression. So mm-hmm. these are civilian activists delivering humanitarian aid and they're shot. So I think that speaks to the larger context and the larger repression against the Palestine Solidarity Movement that we're seeing around the world, orchestrated by the Israeli government. But I think, on the other hand, as I mentioned before, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign, modeled after the solidarity campaign against apartheid in South Africa, is really gaining strength, gaining momentum. Mm-hmm. Over 600 people gathered in Montreal just at the end of October to strategize, organize, and develop that campaign.
That's fantastic, and that's great to hear about grassroots movement going on in Canada despite growing support of Israel's illegal occupation from the minority Canadian Conservative government. Can you talk a bit more about the growing grassroots movement in Canada in support of a free Palestine?
Yeah, no problem. I mean, we live in Canada, and in this context, the Conservative government has been enforcing a legislative repression against the movement. You know, you could say that the entire attempt by the Conservative government to support Israel by any means necessary is really rooted also in its attempt to silence citizens and people across Canada who are engaged in the solidarity movement. For example, there's an attempt by the Conservative government to equate criticism of the Israeli state and Israeli actions and Israeli war crimes with anti-Semitism, hatred and racism against the Jewish people. Obviously, if you look at the track record of the Palestine Solidarity Movement, Jewish people are at the forefront of that global movement, and Israelis themselves inside of Israel are directly engaged in the solidarity movement with the Palestinian struggle for liberation. So it's really an attempt, I think, to criminalize this growing solidarity movement with Palestine. This recent parliamentary committee and international conference we saw in Ottawa, hosted by the Conservative government, to claim that expressing support for Palestine or critiquing the Israeli government is anti-Semitic. This is something we have to reject and critique openly. But I think broader than that and more important is that what we're seeing around the world is the growing signs of a successful social movement. And, you know, we've seen that at other points in history, but I think it's a really exciting time. You know, and me being rejected at the Israeli border and being deported to Amman, to Jordan, I think speaks to the fear on the part of the Israeli government in regards to this growing movement of solidarity with mm-hmm. Palestine, because it's changing opinion, it's changing people's view, and it's changing the understanding of the entire history. I mean, Israel, like Canada, is a nation founded on the dispossession of indigenous people. And so that history cannot remain silent forever. And Palestinians around the world are really organizing to make sure that the world recognizes that Israel was founded on the dispossession of over 750,000 people. You know, and I'm really hoping that people check out and learn more about this growing movement. You can visit bdsmovement.net, that's a global site, or tadaman.ca, that's in Montreal where I live.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk a bit about why the World Education Forum was held in Palestine this year?
The World Education Forum was held in Palestine because of the inability of Palestinians to access education, the reality that Palestinians are denied their right to access education. Education is a universal right. And any time you have an occupying force, and in this case the Israeli army, attempting to extinguish that universal right enshrined by the United Nations, that's a war crime. And so that's why the World Education Forum was held in occupied Palestine.
Yeah, I was reading more about the educational system of Palestine. Can you give examples of how the Israeli military has been preventing people to access, Palestinians to access, a healthy education?
Yeah, well, specifically on education, I mean, we can take the example of, you know, universities in occupied Palestine. For example, Bir Zeit University or Al Najah University. These are two universities that systematically the Israeli government has closed down, has shut down. Palestinians have basically been denied their right to access university education. The Israeli military systematically throughout the Second Intifada, you know, from 2001 until recent years, closed down those universities from students. And so basically Palestinians were collectively punished, which is another war crime, the collective punishment of the civilian population by the occupying power. That's a war crime under the Geneva Convention. So the right to education was systematically denied by the Israeli military through the closing of universities.
What I find is really exemplary and phenomenal is that despite all the current problems that Palestinians face under the ongoing Israeli occupation, is Palestine's commitment to education for change through focusing on things like eliminating gender disparities, adaptability in education, and encouraging the preservation of cultural and historical values. I think it's exemplary that their commitment to education for change is not thwarted. Can you talk about how Palestinians are able to continue to work towards achieving it?
Yeah, I mean, basically, education is a foundation to any society around the world. And without access to education and without education as forming a foundation for future generations, it's basically impossible for any society to retain its culture. And so the fact that Israel is systematically trying to deny the right of education to the Palestinian people illustrates the fact that they're systematically trying to undermine the collective rights and nationhood of Palestine. And so this is a systemic policy, and it really speaks to the larger reality of Israeli apartheid. You know, you have a system of control that basically forces the Palestinian people to live as second-class citizens around the world. Israeli occupation forces basically undermine the right of Palestinians to survive, to live as a society, and that's apartheid. Beyond that, I mean, you have two rights. You know, Israel's the occupying power, but Palestinians travel on different roads. They have different standards of economic welfare. They live in a different context, two separate peoples. That's the definition of apartheid. Desmond Tutu of South Africa has called the situation in Palestine apartheid. I think it's a very accurate description.
Mm-hmm. How can we, as Canadians, as people living off Western privilege, how can we build on the resistance movement against the Israeli apartheid and ensure the flourishing future of it?
Well, I think that the obvious campaign that exists and is growing in strength is the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. And I mean, just to explain the nature of that campaign,
yes,
the idea is basically that through boycotting a government, so economically, culturally, and politically, you can slowly force the government to change their actions, right? So this is not a boycott campaign targeting the Israeli people. Many Israelis are directly involved in this boycott campaign against their own government. But it's a boycott campaign to basically try to force Israel to respect the human rights of Palestinians, because the reality today is that Israel is systematically denying all basic rights to the Palestinian people. And the boycott campaign is really a response to that reality. It's a response to apartheid. And it's a growing campaign. There's many ways people can get involved. For example, if you're a member of a union or a student association, or you're a cultural worker, there's many different campaigns across Canada that are trying to integrate the boycott campaign into labor unions, into student federations. And I'd really encourage people to check out tadamon.ca. There's a lot of information on that site. Also, electronicintifada.net, bdsmovement.net. On all those sites, there's very detailed information about how the boycott campaign works and the ways to present BDS resolutions. So if you're a member of a union, what we've been really working hard to do is to present boycott resolutions within labor unions. So for example, the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, a very grassroots union in Canada, that was the first union to support the boycott against the apartheid government in South Africa. And it's now the first union to support nationally in Canada the boycott campaign against the Israeli government. So it's really a movement that is moving quickly, it's growing, and I think it really speaks to a very urgent situation in Palestine. And the last thing I'd say on that point is that I think Palestine in the next decades will define the legitimacy of international institutions based in the West, like the United Nations. I think that whether or not the United Nations is able to deal fairly with the Palestinian situation, their lives under occupation, their apartheid reality, whether or not the United Nations, based in the United States, of course, is able to deal with Palestine in a fair manner, which means that the UN would force Israel to end its occupation, would force Israel to allow the right of return of the hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees scattered across the world, would force Israel to take down the apartheid wall. Whether or not the international community is able to deal with that reality will define the legitimacy of these institutions, including the United Nations.
So thanks so much, Stefan.
Thank you so much for taking the time to call me in Amman. It was great to speak with you in Guelph, and my best to everybody there.
Thank you for sharing your experiences and talking with us today. So I was just speaking with Stefan Christophe, who had joined us from Amman, Jordan. And Stefan is a Montreal-based musician and social justice activist with Tedemon. Check out Tedemon online at www.tedemon.ca. That's TADAMON.ca. Stefan's Twitter feed is www.twitter.com/spiridon. That's twitter.com/spirodon.